Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to your leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, an editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we're doing something a little different. This will be the first of a larger three-part multimedia series that we're running on our website, neurologylive.com. Featuring insight from three leading migraine care specialists, the series is going to focus on the metamorphosis that migraine care has undergone in the last 30 years, and will cover the advances made in therapeutics, the increases in epidemiologic understanding of the disease, as well as explore what lays on the horizon for the future of treatment. Part 1, Discovery and Development, features an in-depth interview with Dr. Stuart Tepper, the Director of Research at the Dartmouth Headache Clinic and a Professor of Neurology at Dartmouth Geisel School of Medicine. He describes the steps that have been taken since the advent of the triptan class, the new methods of treatment that are being explored, and offered some poignant insight into the obstacles that remain on our quest toward innovation in migraine care. Our timeline starts in the early 1990s with the approval of the triptan class. They marked the first real target of migraine treatments and were a milestone moment in the care of these patients. The mechanism of action for these agents targets the serotonin 1B and 1D receptors, and their development actually played a hand in the scientific classification of those serotonin subreceptors. Now, there are seven such triptans on the market. Almatriptan, elatriptan, frovatriptan, naratriptan, rizatriptan, sumatriptan, and zolmatriptan, all of which are available as generics. Additionally, just as long-standing theories regarding CGRP's involvement in migraine have led to novel agents, new formulation of these serotonin receptor agonists are currently being developed. And while their introduction to the market was a milestone moment and marked a new period of treatment for migraine patients, they did come with their own challenges. Here's Dr. Tepper.
The advent of the triptans came just after there became an international classification of diagnoses that allowed recruitment of patients in studies that were homogeneous worldwide. So there was a conventional diagnostic classification, and actually the criteria that were set up in 1988 for migraine diagnosis have not changed, just for the basics. And so that helped a lot in the development of these migraine-specific acute medicines.
While the approval of triptans was certainly a breakthrough in migraine care, the first major breakthrough in this paradigm dates back to the 1940s, and it brought the skeleton for those triptan products, the ergots. Developed from a bread mold, these compounds were used for both acute and preventive care. However, they carried with them a number of adverse events, most notably in patients who used them in the preventive sense. In fact, one of these agents, which was designed specifically for migraine prevention, known as methysergide or Sansert, was actually pulled from the market because of this. And while the coming of the triptan agents filled a gap in the care of patients with migraine, there still remain some large holes in the paradigm. Dr. Tepper explains.
The problem as of 2018 was, on the one hand, we didn't have good prevention. And on the other hand, the triptans ended up having several significant disadvantages. One, besides the fact they weren't preventive, one was that they caused vasoconstriction, and so they were contraindicated in people with vascular disease. And the second is that overuse of the triptans at 10 or more days per month actually led to a worsening of the headache that led to a transformation of episodic to chronic migraine. And so there were very distinct limitations on triptan use, and that's where things stood as of 2018. Well, during the interim, it became clear that one of the mediators for migraine, that was associated probably with activating migraine as well as processing migraine was a peptide called calcitonin gene-related peptide, or CGRP. And CGRP receptors are located in all of the sites that migraine is initiated and all of the sites where migraine is processed, both outside the brain, in the meninges, and inside the brain. What happened was in the first decade of the 2000s, the first designer drug blocked the CGRP receptor were created. That class of medicines is called gepants.
Now, the gepant class was led off with an agent called elsegepant, then known as BIBN-4096, an intravenous CGRP receptor antagonist developed by Boehringer Ingelheim. Interestingly, data published in 2004 that first showed its efficacy, which was comparable to that of a triptan agent, was almost abandoned due to a lack of follow-ons. The investigators, in a last-ditch effort, penned a letter to the president of the company calling for the data to be published, which they subsequently were, in the New England Journal of Medicine.
That was a proof of concept. Then we knew that if you could block the CGRP receptor, you could terminate migraine. And a bunch of gepants were subsequently made that were oral and that worked to terminate migraine as a new class of acute medicines. And the advantage of gepants were that they would prevent blood vessel dilation, but they would not vasoconstrict.
As Dr. Tepper alluded to, the early gepants had their problems too. As it would turn out, these first treatments were liver toxic. Migraine specialists then began to lose hope that these agents would even make it to the market. And with all the gepant class ultimately wouldn't be abandoned altogether, this obstacle forced the research community to turn back to the drawing board. At this point, they knew that CGRP was a major player in the migraine processes. It was present in both the meninges and the brain. So they shifted their focus solely to the meninges in hopes to avoid passing through the liver. And somehow, what seemed like a backward step at the time actually resulted in yet another breakthrough. This time for the prevention of migraine, the monoclonal antibodies. In a very short period of time, a number of them were brought to the market. Dr. Tepper explains.
Basically, four monoclonal antibodies got developed for prevention of migraine, and three of them suck up all the CGRP outside the brain, and one of them sucks up the CGRP receptor outside the brain. And they all work about the same, and they've all made it to market. Three in 2018 and one this year. And they've completely changed the treatment because suddenly we have prevention designed for migraine with minimal side effects that actually work and often work really fast. And that's been the huge change in prevention. And then on the acute side, they were able to create gepants that were not liver toxic. So two of those gepants for acute treatment of migraine that were not liver toxic got available this year. So now we have an acute type of drug that doesn't cause blood vessel constriction, a class that contains two gepants, and then we have one class of prevention where the side effects are minimal, four of those.
In addition to this influx of treatments, 2020 also featured the first approval of a serotonin 1F receptor agonist for as-needed acute treatment, lasmiditan. This marked the third medicine and the second class of acute agents to become available without the worry of vasoconstriction. Now, in just 2 decades after the first triptan was approved, the treatment marketplace was beginning to fill with options. In the early 2000s, as physicians improved their understanding of this serotonin system and the underlying mechanisms at play in migraine, development in the pipeline began to prosper. Now, the field is reaping those benefits. In fact, the pipeline remains strong. At the American Headache Society's virtual annual meeting this year, presentations were given on two new pathways in migraine. The first, the PAR2 receptor. Here's Dr. Tepper with a little more info.
That was looked at by Frank Pereca, who studies migraine basic science at University of Arizona and Mayo Scottsdale. He was able to show that PAR2 might be a really good target. And then in addition, there is a company in the Bay Area called Shock, XOC, that decided to go back to the ergot skeleton again from where triptans were developed and ergots were developed and create a new set of drugs, one for Parkinson's and one for migraine, that don't probably have the same toxicity that the original ergots had. They used the receptor, serotonin receptor chemistry and pharmacology to come up with potential new treatments that would not cause some of the problems that the older ergots caused, which included this weird side effect where people would get fibrotic complications around the heart, and also something called serotonin syndrome, where patients would become confused because one of the serotonin receptors was excessively activated. And then there's a whole other target that people have been very interested in called PACAP, which stands for pituitary adenylate cyclase activating peptide, polypeptide. And one company developed an anti-PACAP receptor monoclonal antibody and tested it in migraine, and it didn't work. But at least two other companies that I'm aware have developed anti-PACAP monoclonal antibodies against the peptide itself, the polypeptide itself, and those are moving into clinical trials. So that's three categories and four different kinds of medicine where basic science is suggesting new targets and where there appears to be money to study them, probably based on the success of the previous targets where translational research was made real. And, you know, in contrast to Alzheimer's, where all the targets have failed in migraine, the targets have been very effective, and not subtle and not requiring all of these kind of nutty post-hocs. The hope is that it'll be very clear whether these new targets can provide additional help for people that don't respond to anti-CGRP drugs of whatever type. And, you know, I think it's real possible. So based on what's happened, I'm much more optimistic now than I might have been a decade ago when nothing was happening. It looks to me like basic scientists are finding potential new areas to come at migraine for patients for the future, both acute and preventive. We're not done yet. We are not done yet.
Of course, even amid this optimism, migraine has also seen its share of failures over the years. Even recently, in some of these new pathways, such as the PACAP receptor antibody failure presented at AHS that Dr. Tepper mentioned, the process of discovery and development in migraine has not been immune to setbacks. However, the magnitude of the forward steps that have been made appears to have outweighed those backward stumbles. Migraine care has, at times, shown that it's benefited greatly from these failures as well. Each small misstep has guided the attention of researchers toward another pathway or another receptor of promise. The failure of the recent attempt to target PACAP has shown signs of this trend itself.
Even though the antibody to the receptor failed, there's multiple receptors and there's multiple types of PACAP. And PACAP has a lot of features that are similar to CGRP. And I think it's a good target. And one of the ways that we knew that CGRP was associated with migraine is also true of PACAP. And that is that if you infuse CGRP into migraine patients, they get a migraine 3 or 4 hours later. And if you infuse PACAP into migraine patients, they get a migraine. The only other substance that does that is nitroglycerin, is glycerol trinitrate. There's certainly some encouragement is what I would say based on that.
Encouraging would certainly be an accurate way to describe it. With a number of new treatments coming to the forefront in the last decade and a handful of new targets still available for exploration, more patients with migraine than ever before now have access to effective therapies. But, as is the case most of the time, challenges still remain. For one, not every patient responds to these CGRP-targeted therapies. While a large number of them derive benefit, it's obvious that no treatment will ever benefit 100% of patients. So for physicians like Tepper, it became clear pretty quickly that even with the previously unseen benefits these agents brought with them, these new targets are all that some patients have to hold on to. In the meantime, utilizing combination treatment for the patients who do respond but don't achieve enough of a reduction in migraine days have begun to be assessed. Data has been published thus far exploring combinations of both acute and preventive agents, as well as layered treatment of preventives with an old migraine therapy, Botox. As well, as that work continues to go on, there are a number of combination agents that are being developed. Here's Dr. Tepper with a little more.
There are combination treatments that are in the works, such as there's a combo of sumatriptan and naproxen, so a triptan plus a nonsteroidal. A second one in the works that's going to be a form of meloxicam plus rizatriptan, so another NSAID plus another triptan. There's another one that's going to combine sumatriptan plus promethazine, an anti-nauseant. So there are ways that may show synergy and benefit for patients. My thinking is that where the action is likely to end up is in completely new targets. I think there are some people that don't respond to anti-CGRP drugs or have only partial response, and that suggests that there are other targets that mediate migraine for those patients. And those targets could, again, as with CGRP, could generate acute drugs, could generate preventive drugs. We're just not there yet. I think combinations, I think new formulations, all those things are likely to be helpful. But I think that if you want to know where I think the need is in finding the new targets and looking for success with those.
And as these new targets and novel combinations have made their way through the pipeline, the care of migraine has also benefited outside the realm of pharmacologic development. New devices and approaches have been established in tandem with the advances in screening, imaging, and delivery methods that have sprung up over the years. Particularly, as technology has advanced so rapidly since the 1990s, the integration of that technology into medical care has paralleled in innovation. For migraine, this gain from tech has come in the form of non-invasive neuromodulation. As of yet, there are 4 FDA-cleared devices, 3 of which are approved for both acute and preventive care, and 1 which is approved for acute care only. In part because of their success, a number of companies have now jumped into the fray to develop their own devices with varying approaches. These devices, while effective for many patients who use them, are somewhat hindered by expensive price tags and lack of coverage, with the majority of them being only reasonably affordable for those who are covered in insurance from the VA. This has made their effectiveness a rather bittersweet pill to swallow, especially considering their patient-friendly nature.
One of the reasons why I think that non-invasive neuromodulation is important as a therapy for patients with headache disorders is something that Peter Goadsby said, which is that the advantage of neuromodulation is that your targets with neuromodulation include targets that you know about and targets that you don't know about, because you are you're modulating the whole system, all the nerves, all of the glia, you know, everything is modulated by these mm-hmm. neuromodulation devices. And so it's not unusual for me to get a patient, and I'm not making this up, who has had a lack of success with 30, 40, 50 different kinds of medications and then has success with non-invasive neuromodulation. And presumably it's because the medicines that I prescribed didn't actually target where the patient's pathology was. So with these non-invasive devices, you're getting those targets, whether you know it or not. The first of them that made it to market got FDA clearance and we could prescribe was the external trigeminal stimulator, which is which we call the Cephaly device, made by the Cephaly company. That's been out for a decade. And the initial Cephaly device was just for prevention, and then they were able to show that a different program worked for acute treatment, and the FDA cleared it for acute treatment as well. And so now it's a dual device that has a preventive program and an acute program, and it sits on the forehead with sticky electrode, and you turn it on, and if it's the Prevent program, you turn it on for 20 minutes nightly, and it stimulates these afferents of the trigeminal system going into the brain to modulate. And the preventive treatment is 20 minutes nightly, and you can usually tell by 3 months whether it's having adequate prevention. And then it has an acute program you put on the forehead, and you press the button twice, and turns on an acute program that stays on for 60 minutes to bring the migraine down. The second one, which is about 5 years, maybe 6 years ago, is a single pulse transcranial magnetic stimulator. It's really effective. 4 pulses of the magnet in the morning, 4 pulses at night, over 3 months, brings the migraines down. It's studied for both episodic and chronic migraines. Initially, it was approved with 2 pulses acutely to terminate a migraine with Aura, and then subsequently, it was clear that 4 pulses could terminate all kinds of migraines, so it had both acute and preventive effects. Really good. That was eNeura. The third company, ElectroCore, makes a GammaCore device, which is a non-invasive vagal nerve stimulator that has really excellent studies. It's FDA cleared for prevention of migraine, for acute treatment of migraine. It looks like a Norelco razor. Put it on the neck, and it stimulates the vagus through the neck, 2-minute cycles that are repeated, and it can be used both preventively and acutely. It's also approved for acute and preventive treatment of cluster headache. It's very widely prescribed in the VA system. And then the fourth device is called a remote electrical neuromodulation device, REN. And that has the brand name of Neurivio. It's made by a company called Faranica. And that is a really cool device that people put on their arm. It looks like a tourniquet. You turn it on with a smartphone program, and it stimulates the arm and through a reflex turns the migraine off over 45 minutes without any pain or discomfort. Patients really like these. They, you know, they can use them during pregnancy. They can use them. Old people can use them. They can use them when they have contraindications to medications. The problem is access. And as I say, there's at least 4 or 5 other companies that are developing all sorts of interesting non-invasive neuromodulation devices to get into the market. One of these companies has to crack commercial insurance, or this is all going to end.
Cracking coverage challenges remains an issue for almost every specialty in medicine. And unfortunately, migraine is no different. Sadly, this access problem is not limited to just the devices of migraine. Despite all the great leaps made in basic and translational science since the 1990s, each new approval brings with it another prior authorization requirement. For physicians, it makes these moments of approval very challenging to experience. What shows itself to be a new hope for their patients could also apply just another hurdle to overcome in order to get effective treatment. These new therapies, backed by years of failures and new research, have ushered in a new age of management, along with a host of red tape. Here's Dr. Tepper.
I mean, for example, it's so penny-wise and pound-foolish to make patients cycle through these crappy drugs that 83% of them will stop within a year because of side effects and lack of efficacy. What the hell are we doing? We don't do that with asthma. We don't do that with cardiac disease. We don't do it with epilepsy. Here, try this crappy old drug first. I mean, we need to, because the amount of disability for the migraine patients is so huge, and the consequence to the society and to the employer is so great, that this is really stupid, stupid policy. I think you match patient need to designed medications for that need. It's not like these monoclonal antibodies are super expensive. You know, the monoclonal antibodies for rheumatoid arthritis, for MS, they cost $80,000 a year. These cost less than $7,000 a year. I mean, and ICER, when it evaluated what would be a cost that would actually be in line with values, came in at $9,000. They'd be worth it, but they came in under $7,000. So I mean, they're not that expensive. Botox is $7,000, and then you got all of the administration fees for Botox, and so depending on the healthcare system, Botox can run $10,000 or $20,000 a year. And incredibly, Express Scripts just put a step edit of 3 months of Botox before a patient can have a monoclonal antibody. And no headache provider gives one cycle of Botox to see if it'll work. We always give at least three cycles. So this is not only foolish, but it's not based on reality, on how Botox works. And then on top of that, the Medicare, which previously covered Botox, this summer decided that everybody had to have a prior authorization every single time they get Botox. So suddenly every 6 weeks, a patient has to get a prior authorization from Medicare for Botox. I mean, these kinds of obstacles, TRICARE is so resistant to the new treatments, you can't even prescribe a gepant in TRICARE. I mean, they have so many step edits that you just can't get through them, cannot get through them, can't prescribe it. Governmental standpoint, regulatory standpoint, commercial standpoint, it's all wrong. It's one obstacle after another to get patients adequate care.
However, as Dr. Tepper and hundreds of migraine specialists around the country and the world are aware of, it's easy to talk about the challenges. And despite the issues that have been raised with each of these new developments, it would be unfair to say that these last 30 years have proven anything but fruitful for migraine care. An area of medicine once plagued by limited and somewhat unsafe options for more than 50 years has, since 1990, tripled its armamentarium. That's half the time. The current landscape of care is one filling with bright spots that have lit a path toward promise in a formerly dark and empty pipeline. And for the physicians who treat this debilitating illness, that's something to hold on to.
Oh, it's night and day. It's completely paradigm shifting. So even with all of these challenges, I look forward to going into work. I mean, I hear every day from patients about how their lives have changed with these new therapies. It's really fantastic. I'll give you an example. In my own family, two of my family members have migraine, and they weren't that great triptan responders. You know, triptans cause them side effects. It did get them relief, but not always pain-free. One of the people in the family ended up using a lot of anti-inflammatories, so much that I was getting worried about the anti-inflammatory use and getting transformed into chronic migraine and also maybe getting an ulcer. And that family member got onto one of the monoclonal antibodies after trying a couple of the crappy drugs and goes 30 days in a row with no headache. And when he gets a headache, he can take one of the new gepants. And he's headache-free in 2 hours, and he has not a shred of side effects. It's like it completely changed his life. And it's dramatic. So it's very encouraging. Very, very encouraging. Worth fighting for.
That's it for this special edition of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Thanks for listening. Part 2 of this multimedia series on the metamorphosis of migraine care will publish on neurologylive.com next Friday, September 18th. For more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.